So before we reconnect and move further, the little announcement that now for next 5 Tuesdays we'll be taking a break. Next week is the Darshan week, then Savitri week, then I'll be out for 3 weeks. So before starting we'll put up the notice again. So if there's no notice till then there's no class, and before we start we'll put up the notice on Sunday, just before starting. So we have been, actually it's very nice, we have entered the month of Sri Aurobindo's birthday and everything is building up towards that. We started with Sri Aurobindo's early writings, and in a natural course, thanks to the chariot of Jagannath, suddenly the chariot of our studies has taken a turn towards deliberating on the ideal spiritualized society in Sri Aurobindo's light. Last week, in fact last couple of weeks, we have been reading from Sri Aurobindo primarily with regard to that. And last week we shared this idea that there have been efforts in man towards not only individual perfection but also towards collective perfection. Both these tendencies are simultaneous and neither can be neglected, because we cannot imagine an individual, a perfect individual, in a completely imperfect society. The mother and Sri Aurobindo, before they started the ashram, the mother speaks of this, that this was the question before us, whether to move on with our individual transformation or to take everybody along with us. And then she says that the answer was obvious. So they are carrying everybody together. And we see that as she goes more and more into the transformation mode, the physical transformation, when the mother withdraws seemingly from the outer physical field, there are a series of her messages. She says, I hope my children have grown up enough to contact me inside. Then she says, I hope they have developed enough to act in accordance to this central will. And then she says something very interesting, that even when I was in their midst, there was a distance between me and them. And now that I am moving at this pace towards physical transformation, she doesn't use the word towards physical transformation, but it's in that period. She says the gap is becoming wider and wider. So it is amazing, while we as human beings were thinking that she is growing older and older. In fact, she says, they think I do not know what is going on, but I am perfectly aware of everything. But this was the gap which was growing. So this is one of the things, that one of the important works of the mother and Sri Aurobindo, even a central work if one may say so, is not just to give a path for individual yoga. That has been done, and there have been many ways to find the divine presence within. Plenty of ways, and if that is it, one can choose from one of them. But also to establish at a collective level an ideal life, the divine life upon earth. And last week we also read something along these lines, and in this there have been two efforts of mankind, two kinds, secular and religious, and both have failed, or they have helped mankind partially. It won't be right to say that both have failed, because as Sri Aurobindo says, it is the many approximations that justify, and the failures that justify the effort toward the final consummation. So humanity tries every time and it doesn't succeed, but something goes inside it that nourishes the soil. So even the flower or the tree that doesn't really flower, when it falls, it does nourish the soil for another harvest. It is used in fact by the farmers in the cycle of nature. We know how they do it, that you plant in a particular season, a particular trees which are not going to really produce the crop, but it is necessary to enrich the soil. So it's like that. There are many approximations. The secular effort, the essential difference is that in the secular effort, the personality and the person is kept in the background and the principle is taken up. So when human society evolves or organizes itself, say, around the principle of love or around the principle of freedom or the principle of unity, the principle of equality, or anything for that matter, it can be a very mundane principle, the principle of desire, as in a marketplace, it is a secular effort. But behind this secular effort, there is a personality, but is in the background. So we have Marxism with Marx in the background. We have Darwinism with Darwin in the background. The principle is in the front. This is generally called the secular effort. And as we have seen, the problem with this effort is that mankind does not understand or receive the principle in its true light, partly because the person from whom the principle has originated has not touched its absolute height. He has seen something, glimpsed something in the mind, and he gives this principle. Normally, secular efforts are born out of a philosophical effort of mankind to arrive at truth. So philosophy is a very, it's in the mind, some reflection of something higher. It catches some shimmering glimpse or a passing glimpse or a shadow of a great truth. And the moment it gives it a human language, a human form, and then it is received further by the human mind, and mostly a path towards arriving at that is not contained in let us say, a philosophical pursuit. So it becomes imperfect, and by its, in its very origin and inception, it is foredoomed to failure. Because when it is said that we can have liberty at the center, it's a very beautiful thing and human mind identifies with it, or love at the center. But in the absence of any living example, in the absence of a very clear understanding, in the absence of a path to arrive at that greatest possible liberty or the highest possible embodiment of love, this is bound to sooner or later disintegrate, if ever it starts in the right way. In religion, the personality is in the front, the principle is behind. This is the fundamental difference. In both are there. So we have Christ as the embodiment of love. He is the embodiment of love. But one doesn't disembody him and say there is love. He is Christ. And through Christ one approaches love. Krishna is the embodiment of, as Sri Aurobindo says, Ananda and wisdom, the divine wisdom. So it is through him that one arrives at divine wisdom and divine Ananda. Here also, though it is a very solid start, because it is not just an idea, but an idea that has flesh and blood. We are embodied beings and we do not live only in the mind. If somebody lives only in the mind, a principle is enough. It satisfies just the mental pursuit. But since we are also a heart, we are also a will, we are also a body, we like to see that idea embodied in flesh and blood, because it's an integral growth. We are integral beings. We don't just clasp love, we clasp a being who embodies love. So it is a basic difference between human striving or a total human striving and simply a philosophizing of it. But the problem here is, as we have seen, over a period of time, it reduces itself into merely a lip service or a homage to the personality, that too very external. Whereas what the personality comes to represent, that is hardly lived. And as we read last time or shared last time, it is there in the human cycle that over a period of time, humanity even uses the ideal or the embodied personality to justify things that are diametrically opposed to the very ideal. This is, of course, a marvelous thing about human beings. Sri Aurobindo takes a dig at it, one of his early writings, Harmony of Virtue. Earlier also we have mentioned about it. He wrote it at the age of 18. And Sri Aurobindo says, I wrote it rashly in a Platonic style, in the style of Plato. But it's so profound. And he brings out this aspect that how there is a perfect, no problem of harmony at the level of material nature. You look at the stars in space, asteroids whirling at what speed, and scientists will say this may strike, that may collide, stars collide and come out, and yet there is such a wonderful harmony when we look at the vast expanse of space, when we look at material nature as it is. He says the harmony is little disturbed with the coming of life. But still, by and large, life still creates things which are beautiful. The sense of beauty, the sense of symmetry is preserved. But there are forms which one can say are truly hideous. But with the coming of human beings, he says, don't know what happens, that everything seems to disintegrate. And then he explains that precisely because at a human level, this has to build up very consciously. And this is what we come to, that eventually in human beings, harmony, unity, and an ideal society cannot happen just like that. It is an effort. That's the whole problem of human nature, that there has to be a double effort, as again we read last time. The mother says that if we have to have an ideal society, there is a double effort. And she says, first effort is at individual transformation, which is to find the divine presence inside and unite with it. And then she says, the second effort is at collective transformation. Beautifully we have just heard the mother's words just now, and she unites them, the two together, so beautifully, that why she has come here. We have the personal side, the personality side. I came to India to live with Sri Aurobindo, and if after he left his physical body, I continue to be here to do his work. It's very interesting, mother's words, to do his work. But what is his work? There it comes, the principal part of it, which is to serve the truth and to enlighten mankind, and through that to hasten the advent of divine love upon earth, the reign of divine love upon earth. So we see a perfect fusion of the personality and the principal, because this is what humanity needs. And both have to be together for any collective an ideal society to develop. If we just take the principle and there is nothing at the center, human beings do not have a living example. In Essays on the Gita, Sri Aurobindo says, when Krishna says that, take my example, Arjuna, he is actually making the thing very simple for him. That is why there are, with regard to knowing what Krishna's, it's there in all cultures, but what if one wants to know about the truth of Krishna, so there are two ways to understand it. One is through the Gita. In Gita, the principles are there, and the divine personality is also there, comes time to time. But he has given all the principles. The divine personality, he says, is a rahasya. It's one of the rahasya. Everybody cannot grasp it. The other is Bhagavad, which is entirely the personality and the life of Sri Krishna. And it is said that merely reading Bhagavad is liberative. Sri Aurobindo has put a stamp of authenticity on it. He says it's very profound and very deep. It's basically, if one looks at it, just stories. It's stories of Krishna's life, one after another. But it becomes a living example with which one can relate, because for human nature, it's very important to have a living example. And that's why Sri Krishna says to Arjuna, Arjuna, see, if I keep on telling you, you will get confused, because you know what is happening to you. You are asking me, if jnana is superior to karma, then why are you asking me to work? So I am cutting the whole story short. Take my example. And then Krishna says, I have nothing to achieve in this world, and I live in the Brahmic consciousness, and yet I am working. So don't confuse the intellect of humanity. That's what Krishna tells him, and it's very beautiful. A dictum almost, that don't confuse the mind of humanity by high philosophy. Look at the living examples. So this living examples becomes a easy means to move on the path of progress. Second thing which Sri Aurobindo reveals to us, and the mother also reveal, that it becomes an influence even when the divine embodiment seems to withdraw or step behind the veil. He leaves an influence which is vibrating into the atmosphere, and human beings can rise with the touch of that influence. And it makes the process a lot more easier. When someone asks Sri Aurobindo that you are talking of supramental force and you have given the path of yoga, so when the psychic being comes out, should we surrender to the force? Sri Aurobindo says, you have not to surrender to the force. You have to make your surrender to the mother. And then he makes it even more clear. He says, not just to the inner mother, which is the principle of world mother. This is another way to look at it. That is the principle. The mother is a principle. Yes. There is a whole psychological way of understanding it, that it is the mother principle in the universe. And after that, it becomes not a living but a dead principle. After all, a principle need not be living. He says it has to be to the embodied, through whom one contacts the living principle. And then he says the two are one. They are not different. And this tendency of the human mind to make a difference between the embodied principle and the embodiment, Shobindo uses the term, it is one of the ways of an asuric hostile maya that makes you feel that the two are different. And the mother reveals this secret in a very interesting way. She has her own way to tell us. There are very few passages where the mother speaks directly of what is the work of the incarnation. And she says, this is from Collected Works of Mother, volume 10. It's almost towards the end she speaks. If you rise high enough, you find yourself at the heart of all things. She is obviously speaking of her own experience. As we know, Mother and Sri Aurobindo did not speak a word which was not lived by them constantly. And in one of the places she speaks in the agenda of the yoga of the world, where she says she identifies with that love which is at the root of the universe, and it throbs and throbs and pulsates. So here she is putting it in a very decent way, humble way. And what is manifest in this heart can manifest in all things. That is the great secret. The secret of the divine incarnation in an individual form. Strangely, these are echoing exactly the words of the Gita when Sri Krishna says, he reveals three secrets to Arjuna. One is of course the path. The second is, he says, the secret of the divine incarnation. And the third is the secret of absolute surrender to the divine. So he's telling that is the great secret. The secret of the divine incarnation in an individual form. Because in the normal course of things, what manifests at the center is realized in the external form only with the awakening and the response of the will in the individual form. So we can imagine a tree with many, many foliage and flowers and fruits and everything. But all these branches, flowers, fruits and everything else on it, they derive themselves. One, there is the root, and second, there is the trunk. This is the center around which it goes. The whole universe is built around that plan. The harmony comes around that plan. The solar system, sun at the center. Even in the universe, very often, if one looks at a casual picture of the stars, one may wonder if there is a center. But scientists tell us that at the center of the universe, from where we can hypothetically assume the Big Bang took place, there is an immense, incalculable, mighty energy. In fact, they say it's not possible to measure it or even to go near it, because it is drawing all the stars within itself and it's burning with a splendor that very far, if something goes even farthest near to it, it begins to be drawn towards that. So that holds the whole universe, and the expanse of the universe is governed by that center which we cannot see, but is there. And then it collapses back into that center after a whole cycle of the universe is over. So in everything, for a collective harmony to emerge, there has to be a center. And this center is dual. There is a principle and there is a personality. So both come together and the center is created. So here the mother is revealing to us the secret of the divine personality, incarnation. Because in the normal course of things, what manifests at the center is realized in the external form. So a leaf owes its existence to the center. Supposing it says, I am very great, drops on the ground, it begins to rot. Or it stops to draw sustenance. So why human consciousness so far has not been able to create a perfect society is because at the base there is desire and in the center there is ego. And Sri Aurobindo says that was the first plan, the nature's early plan. Now a new plan has to come. The new plan is at the base there is the divine consciousness and in the center there is the divine presence. So we have these two, and when they come together, the divine consciousness and the divine presence that would mediate between the divine consciousness and all the individual branches and the seeds and the fruits and the flowers and everything, and nourish them. Whereas if the central will is represented constantly and permanently in an individual being, this individual being can serve as an intermediary between this will and all beings, and will for them. How simple it becomes. When Satprem asks Mother, it's such a difficult yoga you are revealing to us. In Agenda, when one reads, my God, what kind of transformation, so painful, so difficult. So he says, how do you expect us to do it? Mother says, but my child, I am not asking you to do it. So Mother, what do we have to do? You have to just open yourself to me. I am doing it for you. I don't want anybody else to do it. Besides, it cannot be done by anybody else. So if it can be done in one body, it can be done in everyone else. That's what Sri Aurobindo reveals even in his correspondence, that you people think that it doesn't matter, the supermind, it doesn't matter whosoever can pull at the supermind and become supramentalized, and there is no need of a guru, there is no need of the master. And he says, well, you can try it. He says, you can try it. But all who have tried it have landed up in a horrible cropper, because it's not so simple as that to represent that central will. And that's what we see in the prayers, that Mother is constantly taking the entire humanity and praying for it, and thereby becoming a mediating link. So she says, the individual being in whom this central will is represented can become an intermediary between this central will in the universe and the individuals. Everything this individual being perceives and offers in his consciousness to the supreme will is answered as if it came from each individual being. This is the beauty, that she prays for us and we receive the answer. Of course, it can make us feel that we are great, and this is very dangerous. We have read so many stories, but the beauty is that she does the work for us if we can just open, and she offers our consciousness to the divine, and whatever she receives and passes on to us gets automatically translated within us. And if for any reason the individual elements have a more or less conscious and voluntary relation with that representative being. Now, this is another subtle and interesting thing. The avatar himself has two kinds of work. One is very impersonal. So he doesn't come only for a group of people. He comes for the whole humanity. So he brings something, aspires for the whole earth, and the whole earth receives the prasad. But in proportion to its receptivity and openness. But there is another side, another dimension of the work of the avatar. And the mother says that there is another possibility. The possibility is the individual elements, if for any reason, have a more or less conscious and voluntary relation. One is that he brings down and without knowing it. In fact, in one of the places, the mother says, a time will come when the whole of humanity will be uplifted and turned towards Sri Aurobindo's thought. Now, this is an impersonal thing. And we see that happening. Unconsciously, many people are echoing the truth that Sri Aurobindo has brought down. So that is one part of the work. But there is another part where consciously and voluntarily we can choose to relate with this representative being. The relation increases the efficacy, the effectiveness of the representative individual, and thus the supreme action can act in matter in a much more concrete and permanent manner. So the more we open to the mother, the more we facilitate this yoga, because she has to act upon matter. And there is a general action which is going on, but it is a slow action. Now, if an individual can open and relate consciously and voluntarily, the work can be hastened, because the matter, all of us, as Sri Aurobindo says, have some matter in us, and nobody can deny it. We are not just souls. So this transformation, this work of the divine, this divine action in matter can become much more hastened and fast. That is the reason for these descents of consciousness, which we may describe as polarized. So they come and automatically around them a whole nucleus of humanity gathers. So they kind of polarize. For they always come to earth with a definite purpose and for a special realization, with a mission which is decided upon, determined before the incarnation. These are the great stages of the supreme incarnation on earth. So each incarnation represents or embodies a great divine idea or a divine will, if you may say so. In the divine, the two are one. In the human consciousness, idea and will are disjointed, but in the divine they are one. And it is decided beforehand, and the whole harmony is to develop around it. It cannot be developed in a disjointed manner as in a crowd. There has to be a center, and the center is at once personal and impersonal, individual and universal, because we too are at once personal and impersonal, individual and universal. And then she says something very, very powerful. And when the day comes for the manifestation of supreme love, for the crystallized, concentrated descent of supreme love, that will truly be the hour of transformation, for nothing will be able to resist that. And that takes us to the two quick readings. One is Nalinda. He has written something very beautiful on the ideal center. How exactly one can create harmony? He says, this is the principle, this is the problem of any human collectivity. As Shobindo has said, all problems of existence are essentially problems of harmony. So he says there are three mantras which Shobindo has given for developing this harmony. The first mantra, he says, is that given by the mother. This is the first mantra, which means to any center it applies. He says any spiritual community it applies. To open a center is not sufficient in itself. It's not enough just to have a center and turn into a religious body like any other place. It must be the pure hearth of perfect sincerity in a total consecration to the divine. So this is the first thing, that a center is meant with for a certain purpose. It has a certain ideal, it has a certain spirit, and that has to be kept. And if that is not kept, if it is just a outer body, a very good building, in fact, that's the beauty of at least one of the things that strikes about the ashram, at least to me, I'm sure to many others, that the samadhi is in such an unassuming way. So many places we have gone, I mean all of us have gone. There are huge buildings, beautiful buildings, such architecture and structure and superstructure. You have to take so much effort to go, reach. Here we come, park this car right in front of ashram. Maximum the person says is, sir, please park it just so much aside that you know the gate is open. If one goes to Madurai temple, one has to park 1 kilometer away and everybody walks without complaining of joint pains. But here everybody has a problem, so the car stops right there. One enters, half the time one doesn't know what one is going to experience. Probably a shop, a bookshop or a t-shirt shop. And suddenly there is a place where chappals are kept helter-skelter, deliberately, so that they are not stolen. So the thought that is uppermost in the mind is that the chappal should not be stolen. And one is hurrying the pranam, lest my good chappals go away. Thank God now we have a chappal service center. But then one parks the chappals and right there is the samadhi. Not even sufficient space to move around. And yet, what a powerful radiating center. Why? Because so many have put their sincere love, their spirit of service. They have sacrificed a life, their consciousness, those who have walked before us. I mean, truly it's remarkable. We cannot imagine how they lived, how they walked, what a spirit they have put in this place. And that has fed this place and nourished it. So that's why it is a living presence, a living center, and not just a dead place which becomes a religion. So this is the first necessity. There has to be a living presence at the center, and we have to feed it. How do we feed this fire? By perfect sincerity. If we feed it with smoke of doubt, hostility and all kinds of things, disbelief, disrespect, then over a period of time it recedes or turns into a farcical religion, a sham or a show. So it has to be fed with the perfect sincerity. This is the first mantra. The second, very interestingly, Sri Aurobindo gives this mantra in the words of Sri Aurobindo, love the mother. We want to become embodiments of love. How can we become embodiments of love if we cannot love one who gives all the love and life for the sake of us? So he says, love the mother, always behave as if she was looking at you, for indeed she is always present. So this is the second mantra. So we have all the activities, departments, services, but this should run as a constant inner thread of our life. It is the warp and woof, the central axis around which everything turns. We have in the ashram very interesting, we have had many interesting personalities, still there are and there would be in the future, who cannot see each other eye to eye. But when it comes to mother, they are both gathered around her, they are both her children. And each feels that we are specially blessed by her. Ask each of one and he'll say, mother loves me so much. And one may even say, oh, her love is so overwhelming. And yet, two persons whom she loves tremendously, yet between them there may be conflict and quarrel over everything except this one thing. Love for the mother and love for the mother, from the mother. So she says, the central thing to remember is love the mother and behave as if she is present. And then he says, the final mantra is, let us work as we pray. This is the path. We read last time about these three things, the Sangha, the Dharma, and the central presence, Buddham, which Sri Aurobindo speaks of the divine incarnation. So here the path is, let us work as we pray, for indeed work is the body's best prayer to the divine. So this is the threefold thing around which the life moves. And if one lives this, the more each element lives according to that, spontaneously everything will emerge into a state of harmony. It is not to be tried by any outer means. It will emerge. And then Nalinda ends in a beautiful way. This brings us to the major, the cardinal mantra of the center, the mantra which Sri Aurobindo gives about the constant and living presence of the mother. The very core of a center is this presence. A center grows and can grow perfectly only around the mother's presence and consciousness. So there are two aspects, as we have said, the presence in the center and at the base is the mother's consciousness. Whenever the clouding starts, if an individual or individuals become the center, it's a very problematic thing. It is the divine presence and the divine consciousness. As the ideal for the individual is to be conscious of its central inner being and relate all its parts and all its movements to that central reality, organize itself in perfect harmony around this core of its being, even so, a group center has to organize itself in perfect harmony around the central reality of the mother. No other idea can be at the center. It is the presence and power of the Divine Mother. She is at the center and everything organizes itself around that. Only so can it grow and grow harmoniously. Indeed, a group like the individual can successfully grow into a living and harmonious dynamic truth only when it has in its consciousness at every moment and in every movement of its life the never-failing presence of the Divine Mother. For this only a center can become a divine embodiment, an instrument of the Supreme Mother for the expression and realization of her truth upon this earth. So it's very simple in a way, extraordinarily simple. The simplicity of it is, instead of giving the dharma of a lot of do's and don'ts and proscriptions and prescriptions, a very simple thing, when we do something, can we, as Sri Aurobindo says, can you tell it to the mother? Can you put it before her? Can you show it to her? And that gives the answer to everything. So we close with this mantric passage from Sri Aurobindo. Sri Aurobindo's birth. It is from Essays on the Gita, and we'll read the last passage. Sri Aurobindo has revealed to us that there are threefold work of the avatar: to give a dharma, to establish a sangha, and he himself is at the center. The avatar represents this third element, the divine personality. Nature and being, who is the soul of the dharma and the sangha, informs them with himself, keeps them living, otherwise they become dead over a period of time, merely a mental intellectual principle, and draws men towards the felicity and the liberation. And then that has been done from the divine side. What is to be done from our side to really make this a living reality of earth, of the tomorrow? Because both Mother and Sri Aurobindo have said they have left this dream, they have prepared everything and left this dream in the air for it to manifest upon earth. The inner fruit of the avatar's coming is gained by those who learn from it the true nature of the divine birth and the divine works, and who, growing full of him in their consciousness and taking refuge in him with their whole being, purified by the realizing force of their knowledge and delivered from the lower nature, attain to the divine being and divine nature, Madbhavam. So this purification comes through the knowledge. What is it that he wants us to do? And as Sri Aurobindo and the mother have revealed again and again, when we love someone, we grow into the likeness of the person whom we love. That makes it even more easier. The avatar comes to reveal the divine nature in man. The life of avatar is a living example of what human life should be. That's why Sri Aurobindo reveals in the Gita, our nature he has put on so that we can put his nature. So this is the secret, that why he puts on our nature. The avatar comes to reveal the divine nature in man above this lower nature, and to show what are the divine works. Free, unegoistic, disinterested, impersonal, universal, full of the divine light, the divine power, and the divine love. He comes as the divine personality, which shall fill the consciousness of the human being and replace the limited egoistic personality. So this surrender, this taking refuge in the divine personality is one of the greatest purifier. The mother says people are afraid because they feel that they will lose themselves. But she says true surrender does not annul the personality. She has used the word aggrandizes it. I am sure it's a little mistranslation of what it would mean in French. But what it means is it releases the divine possibilities and the divine potential of a human being when we surrender. As Sri Aurobindo reveals in the mother, that when we surrender to her, she releases the divine elements within our personality, so that it shall be liberated out of ego into infinity and universality, out of birth into immortality. He comes as the divine power and love which calls men to itself, so that they may take refuge in that and no longer in the insufficiency of their human wills and the strife of their human fear, wrath and passion. So ultimately human efforts fail. So we all turn to her and say, we take refuge in you. Our efforts are insufficient. And liberated from all this unquiet and suffering, may live in the calm and bliss of the divine. This is one of the mantras. We know this from the Gita. Famous mantra, Anityam Asukham Lokam Bhajasumam. So from this troubled, unquiet world, we can take refuge in the divine. Nor does it matter in what form and name, or putting forward what aspect of the divine he comes. For in all ways, varying with their nature, men follow the path set to them by the divine. So it doesn't matter how we relate with him. Someone likes to bow down at the samadhi. Someone likes to remember constantly in the heart. Someone likes to read and open to that influence. Essential thing is to keep the mother at the center and to open more and more to her. This is the secret. His nature we must put on as he put ours. His human portion we must grow divine. Our life is a paradox with God for key. So we'll close here for the next 5 weeks.